All right, here we go. Episode 5 of the Frog Fever Big 12 Basketball Podcast brought to you by killerfrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. With me, as always, my co-host Nick Germani. And we've got a pretty good episode coming for you today. We just finished talking to the great Colin Post, and he was great. We talked a lot of men's basketball stuff with him and kind of went over the season, went over what to expect moving forward for TCU. But more generally in the Big 12, there were a lot of great games this week. The Big 12 Big East showdown happened, a lot of great matchups. Nick, what would you say, what's the big takeaway for you over this last week of basketball?
Yeah, I think the big takeaway is that the Big 12 is the best conference. Like, I think we're 7-3 right now, or 8-3, or something
Seven
like
three.
that. Yeah, with one game left, Texas Marquette coming tomorrow. So the Big 12 just cemented that they're the best. There's a couple headlines that came out of it. Obviously, Kansas UConn, I think, was the big game for everybody. So if we want to start off there, I mean, that's a massive win for Kansas when we were kind of calling their bluff last year. Allen Fieldhouse was rocking, and they just pulled out a win over the national champs, who just came back around and beat North Carolina by a ton. So obviously, UConn, it's not to say that UConn's bad. It's to give credit to Kansas where credit's due, and this was massive for him. What do you think?
Yeah, man, Kansas for real, and I keep on harping on the depth part of their team, but they played six guys pretty much in this game and looked really good. Like, they are just a good team, and I think there's no really other way to go around it. Their big three, I guess not really their big three. I mean, it depends on what you would consider the big three, but Hunter Dickinson, Kevin McCullough, and KJ Adams all had great big games. Hunter Dickinson, 15 points for him recently is, feels like kind of a down game, but he played well. KJ Adams, feel like, we have to talk about how cool of a story that was with his mom passing and coming around and hitting the game clinching free throws, also, scoring 18 points. I'm a big fan of him. But and then yeah, Kevin McCullough keeps on getting better. It's just ridiculous. So I think this team is really good.
To if you were to hate on him, like, Stephon Castle did not play for UConn, and it was at Allen Fieldhouse, and that place was rocking, so that was big. But no, everybody showed up for him, and again with the KJ Adams thing, that was awesome. I mean, to go into this year, you'd think Kansas would be the team that we'd hate on, and we've hated on him, but
Oh yeah, I hate him.
after how likable that was, like, it's tough for them to be the hated team from now this point on. So that was awesome.
It is.
I mean, everybody showed out. Hunter Dickinson didn't even have the best game. He had 15 points. Hunter Dickinson is a 3-point shooter at this point. Like, I think he's number one of the Big 12 in 3-point percentage, which is crazy. He stepped that up. Like, DeJuan Harris didn't play good. Everything that I've harped on in the past didn't matter this game. Their defense was really good. They like Tristan UConn. The thing was, UConn was hitting big shots that had no business going in at the end of shot clocks a lot in that game. So it could have even been a bigger win for Kansas, and they probably looked better than the scoreboard even showed. So that's huge. Kansas is gonna have games where they don't, where they're gonna, they're gonna be top 10 the whole year, and they're gonna have big wins, and they're gonna lose some big ones. They're not by far and away the best team, but they showed out, and that's massive for them.
Yeah, it's almost like Kansas is listening to this podcast, and everything that we say, oh, maybe we watch out for this for Kansas, they just prove us wrong. But on Hunter Dickinson, just the numbers he's putting up right now, 20 points a game, 12 rebounds a game, let's see how many block and a half, and then he's shooting 63, 58, and 72 splits, which is kind of unreal. He's averaging 2.1 3-point attempts per game, shooting 58%, which is a career high in both of those things. So he's improved from already being one of the best players in college basketball. So yeah, they're just good. I guess now we can talk about, you want to talk about Kansas State? They had a kind of a dramatic.
Yeah. They had a week. They so Kansas State under Jerome Tang is a thing. He's undefeated in overtime games. Yeah. And this week he had three straight overtime games to good and bad teams. Mm-hmm. Like they beat Oral Roberts last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We might have recorded a pod after that, but
I think
they beat North Alabama. Yeah.
I think we recorded on Tuesday, so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So since the last pod, they had three straight overtime wins against two bad teams, Oral Roberts, North Alabama, and then last night to Villanova when they almost choked the game away and then came back. But I don't know. My take here, and I want to have this take because I'm a TCU fan, so I'm supposed to hate K-State, is that I think K-State's kind of frauds.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense just isn't there. They squeak away. They're Ken Pom's 52, and they just got so lucky with these games. And I don't know if it's luck because Tang's done this over and over again, but I don't know. I think at some point they're just going to have to crumble, and they're just so inconsistent at this point that I can't really trust them to have success in such a deep Big 12.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're the same team they were last year, obviously. But as far as entertainment goes, this might be the team to watch in the Big 12. Like,
yeah, for sure.
No matter who they're playing. And to be fair, like, let's see. Villanova is pretty good. Like, they've struggled, but Villanova is a decent team. Yeah. Arthur Kaluma is looking good. I agree with you. If they were a great team, they would have not gone to three straight overtimes against these three opponents. But
yeah,
the fact that they're winning these games and the fact that they're providing such great entertainment for us all, you know, I think it's fun.
Yeah.
And at some point, yeah, they're going to start to lose. Like Jerome Tang is not going to be 100% overtime coach in his career. He's going to lose some. But for now, it's just been kind of crazy. They've had a wild, wild week.
I know. I guess maybe I'm just tired of seeing that dance they do. And then Tang gets in it. I'm just starting to get sick of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Arthur Kaluma balled
in
a game when Tyler Perry really wasn't good. And then once Tyler Perry had an awful game, and then he just came alive randomly to hit the game tying three and to hit a big layup. He just, I don't know. I mean, they have dudes. They just, sometimes the dudes are really good and sometimes they're bad. And it's one dude is bad every game and then another dude gets better. So I don't know what to think of this team. Yeah, I guess they're just Mr. Entertainment all the way around. That's just what Tang does. So that's probably the takeaway I have with K-State. I just thought that was super interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's an interesting stat before we get into another matchup. The last four Big 12 Big East matchups have gotten, in 2019, Big East went 8-2. 2020 was tied. 2021 was tied. 2022, it was tied. This year, it's 7-3 in favor of the Big 12 with Texas and Marquette going tonight. So that's kind of interesting. But to jump back into a game, let's talk about, what about Houston? Houston had a good win.
Houston was threatened in that game too. Like it was close, and Xavier's a good, I mean, Xavier just lost to, I think they got upset by Delaware, I think, yesterday. So Xavier may not be great, but I mean, they're a good team. Houston got threatened. That was the first real kind of threat Houston's had all year, I would say. Houston's number one KenPom. They're arguably the best team in the nation at this point, with Purdue going down and Kansas losing and all these other teams falling. So it was a great win for Houston at Xavier in a tough place to play. And I think it's just something to hang your hat on. Like, they got pushed a little bit. LJ Cryer has proven to be one of the best transfers in the country.
Yeah.
They have Juwan Roberts. They have Jamal Sheed coming back from last year. They're a really complete team. Terrence Arsenault, big off the bench. Like they've developed. They have such strong defense. They're going to be one of the best teams in the country all year.
Yeah.
And that was a nice win when they were tested on the road back against the wall to pull out a very quality win.
Yeah. Your point on LJ Cryer, he played 38 minutes in that game and scored 23, led him in scoring, 8 of 16 from the floor, 5 of 12 from three. That was a big loss for Baylor and a big get for Houston. But yeah, I mean, if I'm a Houston fan, I'm almost excited about, you know, going on the road and getting tested like they did and still beating a good Xavier team. Xavier is 4-4 now, but they're good. They lost to a Jameer Nelson Jr. less Delaware team. So
yeah,
who knows about that? But I think, like, if I'm Houston, I almost want to see some of these close games because they're blowing everyone out right now. And I think this was the first, they beat Utah by 10. That's the only close game besides this one. So, I mean, I would be excited to see some of these teams kind of push Houston around and still have the Cougars come out on top. I think that's very encouraging.
Yeah, we talk a lot of TCU with Colin Post, which is a great interview coming up. Yeah. But we talked that TCU Georgetown game, and TCU is a much better game than Georgetown. But I mean, that was tough. These biggest teams have talent, and going on the road, like, those environments are hectic and loud. And when you get pushed late in the game, and when you're in the number one seed and you have that target on your back, people are going to get up for you. So a game against a top 50 team in KenPom on the road, Big East, that is a much more quality win than people may even realize. And Houston's just on a clear path to staying at the top for a while.
Yeah. All right. Let's do Oklahoma State, because this is pretty sad. Now they lost to Creighton by 14 at home. And then they just now lost to Southern Illinois, who really, Southern Illinois is 108 in KenPom. They're not that bad. But like,
yeah, I think Oklahoma State was dogs in that game, which is kind of crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
On the road, yeah.
Yeah. So they lost by 2 on the road to Southern Illinois. They're now 3-5 with really no good wins and a couple bad losses. So I don't know. What do we think about Oklahoma State? Is it time to write them off completely?
Yeah, it's tough, and I don't think they're great. But they've lost, like, they've been unlucky too.
Yeah.
You know, they've lost overtime games. They lost to St. Bonaventure by 2. They lost to Southern Illinois yesterday by 2, and they had a chance to win. They have an easy schedule coming up, so if they drop one of the next 5 easy games, Tulsa, Oral Roberts, Wofford, South Carolina State, Chicago State should all be wins heading into the Big 12. If they drop one of those, I think, yes, you write them off. And Creighton is a great team, so you can't really fault them for that.
Yeah.
Some people are calling to fire Boynton. I don't know if you want to do that.
No.
I mean, he can recruit well, and he's built a good culture there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you kind of pump the brakes. Yes, they're not good, and yes, it's going to be tough for them to get wins in the Big 12, but I think you wait to take them out of the frisky tier until they drop a game.
Yeah.
If they drop another non-conference game, you write them off. But
yeah,
right now, they're still in my frisky tier, could beat somebody.
Yeah, and they get Tulsa on a neutral site, and then the next 4 that you mentioned, Oral Roberts, Wofford, South Carolina State, and Chicago State are all home games. So those are all, literally, they're all must-wins. You have to win those games. And then, because right after that Chicago State game, three days later, you get number 5 in KenPom, Baylor at home, which is going to be a tough one. And then you get Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas State, TCU. Like, it just doesn't, you're not going
to
have,
they have a tough start to conference.
You're not going to have opportunities to get easy wins in the Big 12. Even West Virginia is, you know, 109 in KenPom, and they just lost to the 108 team in KenPom. So, like, it's just, there's not going to be any easy games. And at some point, they're going to have to start winning, you know, and I think this is the time where they string, you know, if they string together 5 wins going into Baylor, that could be a whole new team we're looking at with a new confidence, a new swagger about them, and maybe they go beat Baylor and it's a completely new story. So I agree with you. I think I like that. They're in the frisky tier, and they'll be there until, you know, if they go and they lose to South Carolina State or Wofford or something, I think then you have to talk about writing them off and maybe you know, I hate it, but maybe then it becomes a conversation of, is Mike Boynton like your guy? Is he your guy?
Yeah.
Which is sad because I love him. But at some point, especially if you drop one of those games, you just have to, you know, you have to talk about it at least.
That's the thing about Oklahoma State is that they're likable. So
yeah, I know.
It's tough to hate him. So yeah. I don't know. I find myself giving them the benefit of the doubt probably more than I should, but
yeah. Okay. So the one game left in the Big 12 Big East showdown is Texas versus Marquette. Whereas this is at Marquette.
I don't know if you can hear right now, but there's like a siren going on outside my road. So if I have trouble hearing here.
Okay. Well, we got Texas Marquette tonight. At Marquette. KenPom has this game in favor of Marquette by 8 points. Marquette's the team that beat Kansas. Marquette's good. And we're still learning about Texas, I think. What do you want to see out of Texas in this matchup against Marquette?
This is a huge opportunity for Texas. I think people aren't thinking of Texas in the upper echelon, like top of the Big 12 right now. They lost to UConn. They had a tough – UConn was really the only, like, really good team they played, and then they got bailed out with an Ace Miss game winner against Louisville. So this is a massive opportunity for Texas in the finale of the Big East, Big 12 at Marquette. I don't think they'll win, but if they do, it cements them as like a top five, top six Big 12 team that'll be upper echelon. They're still working back from injuries. Like we talked about in the Colin Post interview, they're out Dessou. They're out key players. So I think this is a huge, huge, huge opportunity for Texas to make a statement win in the non-conference when they don't really have that many other opportunities to make that statement.
Yeah. Is there any word on when Dessou will be back or available?
I don't know. I keep hearing, I thought he practiced. But I have no idea what his timeline is.
Well, I hope they get him back soon because I really don't think you can even, you know, evaluate this team without seeing him at least. Okay. Here's someone from the, 247 Texas board says that he is not expected to play against Marquette, but he's on track for a mid-December return. They're saying maybe the LSU game in Houston would be the return schedule for him. But the good news is, I guess, they'll have him back before the Big 12. But yeah, I just want to see them with Dylan because he's one of the better players in the conference. And he probably makes them a completely different team than what we're watching now.
He's arguably the best player on their team, and he was the Big 12 tournament player or player of the tournament, I guess, last year. So it's tough to make any real judgments about this Texas team until he comes back. So you don't expect to win against Marquette, but again, the opportunity is there where you can improve your seeding massive, your resume, take a huge boost in it. It would be sick for Texas if they pulled it out.
Yeah. All right. Before we get into some of the other matchups coming up in the Big 12, the first edition of the net rankings came out, and
it's
been really funny to look at on Twitter. A lot of fans are freaking out, but these net rankings are always kind of wonky when they first come out, so they're a little silly. But what I mean, I think the first thing we have to address is the first place team in the Big 12 is not, like, I could probably give you three or four guesses as to who the number one net team in the Big 12 is, and you probably wouldn't get them.
No.
It's BYU, which is crazy. And they have had a great start to the year, but I don't know. We can't really put too much stock into the net yet because they are a little weird, but what do you think? What do you think of the first edition of these net rankings?
I mean, yeah, BYU is the number one team in the country,
yeah,
according to net rankings, which is insane.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we are having, like, can say that right now is massive. But the big takeaway here is that the Big 12 is so far and away the best conference in basketball. It's crazy. So they have the top two teams, and arguably the top two teams aren't even
Yeah.
Like, you can make an argument that Kansas is better than, obviously, BYU
Yeah.
and Houston. And then Baylor's right there, too. I think there's seven of the top 17 teams in net are Big 12, which is insane. Oklahoma's there. Iowa State's there. Cincinnati's there. And then on the outside, you even have your undefeated TCU at 40. You know, you have Texas. There are – it is unfathomable how crazy good the Big 12 is, and it is huge to be in the conference.
Yeah.
I don't know how much value people put on KenPom. I mean, on net, I feel like people value other – like, as we've seen the past couple of years, people value other rankings as opposed to it. But it's definitely one of the top that people consider come Selection Sunday. So – this is huge for Big 12 teams. And if BYU can push the agenda as a one seed, I mean, BYU, it's kind of the point where you actually have to start taking them seriously as a top team in the country, because they're 6 in KenPom. They're undefeated. They have quality wins all over the place. And they have a huge game this weekend that could even cement them more as a top team going into the conference play at Utah. If they win that, they play nobody else heading into conference, and they have one of the most, they've arguably the most impressive resume in the country coming into conference play, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So, big takeaway: Big 12 is still the best.
Yeah, we've been on BYU being better than anticipated for a while now. So that's cool to see that net is backing us up. But another team that I forgot to talk about in the Big 12 Big East thing that you just mentioned, and I feel like we have to bring them up, is Oklahoma, because they're undefeated with some good wins. You know, this year they beat Iowa, USC, they just beat Providence. And they are, you know, they're the 19th best team in the country, AP poll. So, what's this Oklahoma team all about right now?
Yeah, I said last year that they kind of reminded me of the 2021 TCU team, where they just pulled a ton of transfers and are clicking. And sometimes that randomly, like, it's tough to do, but sometimes it randomly works where you find the right guys that are doing it. Javion McCollum, their guard, is one of the best leaders on the floor. He's commanding everything well. Otega Owe, we talked about with Colin too in the interview. He's been one of the most improved players in the country, the sophomore forward. You got Milos Uzon. You know, like, they are just deep, and they are pulling out quality wins. I love the way that Porter Moser constructed their non-conference, because I think they are playing a lot of tough teams that are beatable. They have Arkansas coming up, I think, on a neutral site, you know, in
Saturday.
Having Iowa, USC, Providence, Arkansas, North Carolina is coming up. Like, they have constructed their schedule almost perfectly, where they're playing tough teams that boost their rankings all across the board and are beatable. So the fact that they're clean slate is crazy impressive, and they you got to tip your cap to them.
Yeah, they deserve a ton of credit, and that Arkansas game will be a big one in terms of figuring out. I mean, I guess we already know, because they beat good teams, but that would be another really big win for them. And it's great to stack those big non-conference wins, especially when you're in the Big 12. But yeah, Porter Moser's doing a really good job. This is the best team he's had since those loyal Chicago teams. So yeah, I'm happy for him. Happy for Oklahoma. You know, and to your point about Otega Owe, his shooting splits, just so you know, are 67, 77, and 72, and he's averaging 15.
Crazy.
So, that's kind of unheard of. He's jumped from 5 a game last year to 15 a game this year, 13 minutes last year, 25 this year. So he's one of the most improved players in the conference easily, and kind of the real leader on that team right now.
I think, too, something that's notable is that, so we're a week into December now, and there's 14 teams unbeaten left in the country. And 6 of those teams are in the Big 12, which is crazy. You have Houston, Baylor, BYU, Oklahoma, TCU, and Cincinnati. I think I named 6. Yeah. But, I mean, that's insane how so many people have run the course of their schedule. You know, maybe not the toughest teams all across the board for everybody, because you do play in a Big 12 conference where you don't need to necessarily stack those wins. But we've been crazy impressive, and I think it's I don't know. I keep kind of saying the same thing, but the Big 12 is just so good.
Yeah, it's the best conference in basketball. It really is. Okay, before we go to the call-in interview, let's talk a little bit about some of the upcoming games. There's a lot of good games this Saturday. The first one on our list being, well, the first one we talked about already, Arkansas, Oklahoma, but the one we have next on our list here is Missouri at Kansas. This is not really the test that it's not really a huge test for Kansas, because Missouri is not as good as it was last year, and it's at Allen Fieldhouse. It's going to be a tough game for Missouri, but it is a rivalry game. It's one of the great rivalries in college basketball historically, so anything could happen. But yeah, what do you want to see from Kansas this weekend against a big, you know, big rival in Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, just cement how good you are. I think, you know, you're going to be at home. It's going to be a ruckus Saturday. Like, the good thing, or the silver lining to college football going away on Saturday, is that you get these big Saturday basketball game day slates where everything's just hyped up and crowds are going crazy again. And we're starting to get in that point of the year. We're going to see that. Just solidify, like, Missouri's obviously is not, you know, a top 50 team or top 30 team.
No.
But they're, I mean, they're a quality opponent that you can't sleep on. Like, they've beaten Pitt, you know, Pitt definitely the, know better
Pitt,
than me.
Pitt on the road was a big
yeah.
point. And then, you know, Wichita State's always a frisky team. They just beat them at home. So,
and then obviously we talked about Kansas being thin. We said it again and again. So if somebody gets into foul trouble, you could be in danger, and you can see how people, you know, step up in those type of circumstances. But yeah, they should win. You can't sleep on, but it should be a win for Kansas.
Yeah, I don't see anybody on Missouri's team that can stop Hunter Dickinson. They're just not big enough, and they don't have that guy. Again, we kind of talked about guys like that with Colin. There are types of guys that you need to have to stop people like Hunter Dickinson, and Missouri's not one of the teams that has it. So I'd look for him to have a big game, and if, you know, somehow they can minimize what Hunter Dickinson does, maybe you see a close game, maybe one that Missouri sneaks away with. But yeah, I think this is one that Kansas has to win. Oh, I guess not has to win, because again, Missouri is a top 100 team, and you can't ever look past this. But this would be a good win for them. I guess really just continue to win, stack wins before the Big 12 is important for all these teams. Let's see, what do we have? All right, next we have Cincinnati at Xavier. Cincinnati is one of those undefeated teams you just mentioned. Talk to me about Cincinnati a little bit. What's going on over there?
I mean, I'm super excited about this matchup against Xavier, because Cincinnati has been flying under the radar because they've taken a similar approach to TCU where they haven't really played anybody. Their only notable win is really Georgia Tech at home. But they play a Xavier team who's going to be pissed off coming off the Delaware loss. And Xavier just pushed Houston. So Xavier's a good team, and this will be their first big test of the season. On the road at Xavier, I don't know. I haven't really watched much of the Cincinnati team.
Yeah,
Victor Lakin, I think, is a guy that they use a lot. CJ Frederick, I know, is a big transfer coming in, who's a shooter. Their point is Day-Day Thomas, who's a cool name. Jizzle James, I know, is big there. A couple sick names there. So I'm excited to watch this game and actually see what the Cincinnati team brings to the table. And it's a huge litmus test and probably one of the most interesting games in the Big 12 this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last matchup we have before we go to the call-in interview, we talked about it a little bit, BYU at Utah. This is a game, another great test for BYU, who's, you know, flown right by all the tests they've had so far. So this is another exciting opportunity for them. It's a game on the road at Utah, who's a quality opponent. Real quick, you know, what are your thoughts on this game and And what does a win do mean for BYU?
This game's going to be sick because BYU and Utah hate each other. Yep. And BYU is going at Utah as the number one team in the net. Like, Utah is going to be firing at them. Mm-hmm. Their forward, Traore, is questionable. I don't think he practiced today, but Mark Pope said he was questionable for the game. I don't know how big that is, if mm-hmm. he's able to play or not. So that's definitely something that's aiding them or hurting them in a sense. But Utah's a good team. Like, they have a quality win over St. Mary's at mm-hmm. St. Mary's. They only lost to Houston and St. John's. So, I mean, they're 40 in KenPom. They have a lot of people that came back. I think they're the tallest team in college basketball, which if Traore's out, they're a big man. That would be a difficult task for them. Obviously, BYU's got good guard play. But if BYU can pull this out, they have – clean sledding to conference play, so
yeah,
they could be able to really set a message this weekend that they're here to compete.
Yeah, it's gonna be a really fun Saturday. You have all three of these matchups we just mentioned. These teams don't like each other. Missouri, Kansas, Cincinnati, Xavier, BYU, Utah. Teams do not like each other. And yeah, you said it. College, you know, with the lack of college football, it's going to bring out some of these fun non-conference games, and I'm excited to watch all these games. It'll be a lot of fun. But yeah, anything else before we get to Colin?
Yeah. I mean, Colin's a must listen interview. We go over everything from this year, TCU, to previous year's TCU. Mm-hmm. And then we also preview TCU Clemson there and talk about Georgetown. So you don't miss anything there. And that Clemson game is a huge opportunity for TCU to make a statement this weekend as well. So a lot of great games this weekend and great pod.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break and we'll bring Colin in.
Okay, so we're here welcoming the first guest on the Frogs Fever pod. We got Colin Post. Colin Post went to TCU from 2018 to 2022. He covered the Frogs hoops for Frogs at War, TCU 360, and 247. And welcome on, Colin. How are you doing?
Nick, I appreciate it, bro. Yeah, it's great to be on. And, dude, love talking Frog hoops. It's my favorite thing to talk about when it comes to TCU sports. So, appreciate y'all having me on. Love the work y'all are doing. So,
yeah. So, if we want to jump in, I mean, the elephant in the room, we want to talk about that TCU Georgetown Emmanuel Miller game winner. Like, what were your takes about the Georgetown game, and how do you think they fared against their first real opponent?
Yeah, and Nick, I think it highlights something that we do need to be cautious about with this TCU team. Undefeated right now, a lot of exciting pieces. I'm sure things we'll talk about more going forward, but largely untested. This is a team that out of the 362 teams in college basketball has the lowest ranked strength of schedule right now. Now, as Jamie Dixon talked about recently, they have, I believe it's the eighth hardest schedule going forward because of the gauntlet that the Big 12 is in, and also a couple teams in Clemson and Arizona State that they'll face this month. But this TCU team has largely been playing bottom of the barrel teams. And so what was interesting on Saturday is we saw them face a team who still will not probably be in the NCAA tournament, but is competent, and it wasn't in Shomai Arena. And so I think it was good for TCU to face some adversity. A couple people needed to hit big time shots down the stretch, and we saw Jacoby Coles hit a massive three to set up the potential game winner. And so, yes, Emmanuel Miller stepped out that game, that interesting, you know, concept of should they won, should they not. But I think, to your point, Nick, highlights a bigger concept, and is that TCU faced adversity and was able to get out with a win. And you could say a lot of things about, man, should this TCU team have beaten Georgetown by more? I think you could argue yes. But if we go back the last 5-6 years since I've been covering TCU basketball, they always have laid an egg in non-conference play. I'm thinking a huge example being the Santa Clara loss in 2021, that fall before the year they went to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 5 years. That was a 20-point loss on a neutral site where it was like, what is going on? So for TCU to be able to be undefeated to this point, I think does show improvement it does show a more cohesive front, a couple themes that we've seen in this TCU team so far. So I'm encouraged. They're not where they need to be. Jamie would tell you that as well. Yeah. But to be unscathed at this point is something we haven't seen from TCU in the past 5-6 years, and I think that's worth being encouraged.
Yeah, when you look at the game winner too, though, like obviously he stepped out and we kind of caught a break there, and it was such an up and down game. But
yeah,
when you think about past years and that moment of the game winner, what do you think is the best moment you've had covering? Because like we've had the rushing of the courts with Kansas and Tech, we've had, you know, tourney wins. Is this, how does this rank up there with recent victories?
Yeah, dude, that's a great question. I think instantly coming to my mind, you want to go back very recent memory. I got to be covering the game in Denver last year when Jacoby Coles hit that floater. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the implications there. Mike Miles giving up a game winner for a longtime high school friend. Just cool, cool moment there that we've now seen, I think, Jacoby build on this year. But then if you want to go back and so many cool moments that Tech and Kansas went back to back in 2022 was pretty sick to kind of clinch a tournament spot. But to me, the greatest thing I've ever seen was actually an irrelevant win for TCU basketball. It was in early March. I want to say it might have been March 1st of 2020. Desmond Bane's game, yes, against Baylor.
Baylor, yeah.
The little, I believe it was a personal 11-0 run. When he said, "I'm that guy, and this is my time." And I've never seen a building shut down like that. I've never seen a bench rush the court mid-game. And that Baylor team would have, in my opinion, probably won the national championship had COVID not canceled the tournament. And Desmond Bane nearly single-handedly turned that game around and had Draymond Green tweeting about him. So the spin move on Freddie Gillespie, you know, one of the greatest basketball players I've ever seen live. So, dude, that's an awesome question. And I would say those are kind of the two that come to my mind. But okay. Eman's shot, pretty sick, especially for a dude, yeah, who used to not be super capable from behind the three-point line. So I love that moment.
And when you think of players, like you said, Bane, we've had Mike and, you know, we have Eman now. Who's the best player you've had covering the past couple of years?
Yeah, dude, it's a great question because it depends on how you define player. The most talented person that's ever stepped foot in Fort Worth on a basketball court is Mike Miles. Undeniably, you want to ask a guy like Drew Timmy about that. Mike Miles was giving Gonzaga business that he had no business giving him in Denver last year. Unstoppable bucket. And there were some controllable and uncontrollable things that I think diminished his career a little bit more than it could have been. I think he could have been Big 12 player of the year, at least a Big 12 first team guy. Obviously he never made the first team, but then at the same time, you want to talk about a guy who transformed the program. Desmond Bane obviously helped get TCU to the point that they were at, just by one, building excitement; two, showing what Jamie could do player development wise; three, you know, helping convince guys that it was cool to be at TCU on the basketball court. So I think those guys are really, you know, they stand out talent wise. And then Desmond has clearly shown in the pros that he was developed so well. But what's cool to me about Emmanuel Miller is, in my opinion, he's the best leader I've ever covered in TCU athletics. And that would include a Max Duggan. That would include a lot of amazing athletes that I've covered in TCU volleyball, TCU baseball as well. Emmanuel Miller is always willing to take blame. He's always willing to point out where TCU needs to be better. He's always willing to, you know, say whatever he needs to say to invigorate his team to get better. And I think combined with talent that he's really worked on, that's why he's the most influential player to me on this team currently. So it depends how you define it. I'd say Mike talent, Desmond achievements, Eman leadership.
That's a
About Eman for you, if that's all right.
Yeah.
So when he transferred in from A&M, was there, you were covering the team at the time, did you think that was the type of guy who could be like the guy on a TCU team down the road, what was your kind of thought on him as a player then, and, you know, now I guess where he is now?
Yeah, dude, that's a great question. What's cool is TCU had already had a history of getting transfers that ended up having huge impact from A&M. And Alex Robinson, you know, the all-time assist leader at TCU. I live in College Station. I was just at Reed Arena, saw a picture of that team, and remember that he used to be played for A&M, was a great point guard for A&M. So that was encouraging already, just to think about the program. I will say no, though, and I think that's what surprised me so much about Eman, is I've always seen Emmanuel as a great, you know, Robin to someone's Batman, or maybe just like a great, you know, I don't want to say role player, but maybe not the guy. And I think a big reason is uncontrollable for him. He's in a weird spot size-wise for basketball. You see in college basketball today, absolutely dominated by great guard play and then really dominant center play. The forwards, especially a guy who's only 6'7", like he is, they often are just guys who contribute well because they're in a weird spot of, unless they can shoot well, think of like a Julian Strother from Gonzaga last year, unless they can shoot well, it's kind of hard for them to be a leading scorer. So what Eman has had to do is develop guard skills, which is why we see him playing more of a three. At A&M, he was way more of a four and sometimes a five. Yep. And so, no, I didn't see him. I saw him as an awesome contributor. I thought a lot of his buckets at A&M were like cleanup buckets, or, you know, buckets that were set up for him by his teammates. And I think he's learned a lot better how to do that still well, but create at TCU. And I think coming back for a fifth year will make him a lot of money in the future. I don't see him as an NBA guy, but I think the 3 years he spent at TCU has turned him from a guy who's playing overseas and in the, you know, a league that maybe doesn't have too much relevance, to probably a guy who's going to get a legitimate G League slot or opportunity, if not just a great European opportunity. And so really excited for him. And yeah, to answer your question, no. And I think he's really developed that well. So
Yeah, we've talked about on this pod too how it doesn't seem like in past years you've had the Mike or the D Bane and had the go-to guy. And this year you don't really have it, and we've talked whether that's a positive or a negative. Do you think that's beneficial in a way, and we've seen it so far, and do you think it'll continue that way, or will somebody emerge?
Dude, I think that's a great question. Something I've been thinking about too. You know, people joke with me about me being such a big Mike fan, just because I got to cover him closely, got to get to know him. And I think there are pros and cons. I was talking with a guy who works with the team the day of the season opener. What's different? And he said, to be honest, talent is down, but the cohesion, the synergy, the work ethic is up. And I think this team is not as good, but will finish better. And so there are pros and cons to that. And in college basketball today, you see a need for, when it's all said and done and you're playing in the middle of, you know, let's say we're playing in Oklahoma City in the NCAA tournament, none of your fans are there. It's time for someone to step up and get a bucket late against an NCAA tournament opponent you've never seen. It's really hard to do that when you don't have a dude. Case study, Tennessee. They have not been able to have NCAA tournament success because they haven't had a guy in a long time. And I think that will be the same of them this year, despite how great team basketball they play. So I'm interested. Eman stepped up on Saturday. I think the guy has to be Jameer, though. I think it comes from guard play. I think he's shifty. He has the knack for getting to the rim. And so I think big shot creation, I'm not even saying necessarily shot making. I think Jacoby, Eman, both capable of that. We've seen Choco Bannon make big shots in his career. But I think big shot creation, whether that means actually taking it and making it or providing an assist or creating that play, is going to have to come from Jameer. And I don't know if he's fully gained that confidence at this level yet, but we've seen signs. And, dude, that dude has a knack for getting to the rim and just getting a bucket that I think come March will be really key. So to answer your question, yes, it hurts. But I think overall what's cool is the potential is here for this team.
Yeah, you said that you don't think this team's better, but it could go farther. What team do you think is the best? Do you think it's last year's team had the biggest ceiling of teams in the past?
Yeah, no, that is another great question, and I think it's hard Yeah, dude, I'm just going to be honest. Like, what happened last year was like really unforeseeable. One, you're playing Big 12 SEC Challenge, and on a random play, Mike Hyper sends his knee. Yeah. Like, and very easily could have been out of basketball until August, and probably would have never gotten an opportunity with the G League even, or the Legends like he is now. So that one, grateful that that wasn't as bad as it could have been, but that's just fluky. And then, you know, hard to share all details here, but what happened with Eddie Lampkin was just like truly so unfortunate. And as a guy who knows Eddie decently well, I'm really happy for him that he seems to be really enjoying, and I've talked to him a little bit this fall, he seems to really be enjoying his time with Colorado. But he was a guy that you just unforeseeable things happening in February and March, and both, once again, kind of like I said earlier, controllable on his end and some were uncontrollable. And so I think that, you know, it prevented this team from ever gelling fully. And so when you get to the tournament, you know, you have to have a couple things fall your way, which they did in against Arizona State. And then Mike really tried to do all he could against Gonzaga, but nobody could guard Drew Timmy. And I just try to imagine what is happening if we have Eddie Lampkin guarding Drew Timmy and hopefully slowing him down. And so anyways, I would say yes, that is, in my opinion, the most talented and the highest ceiling that TCU team has ever had in this program. But that's the way it goes. Like, sometimes it just doesn't fall that way. And great programs are able to have continued success even when unforeseeable things happen. It seems like Jamie may be building that culture and is getting there. I think we'll be able to tell once Big 12 play comes this year, kind of, if that's what he's doing. So
it's hard not to imagine what that Gonzaga game looks like if you have the Eddie Lampkin that played against Arizona the year before. Like, it's hard. It's just hard not to think about how if that game goes differently and if that sparks a run.
Yeah, and you got a guy, Suleiman Doumbia, who, like, one of the greatest dudes that I've known personally, TCU basketball, just such a nice guy. And I, you know, hopeful that he has a good year this year at Sam Houston State, because that I just, like, wish the best for him and his family. But whenever you have a guy like him going out there just to kind of throw Timmy off, and it worked a couple of possessions, it was awesome. But, dude, that's kind of how you know. And what's tough is Xavier Cork doesn't really have the, you know, he doesn't really have the accessibility or the speed to guard a guy like Drew Timmy. And Eddie honestly was built to shut guys like that down, or at least slow them down. And he wasn't there, and he couldn't be there. And so, you know, for TCU to even keep that game as close as it was, I think is a testament to the guard play they got and really good coaching. So unfortunate, but like I said, great programs are able to work around it, and you can't blame that. And so I think I'm encouraged by the way Jamie Dixon did his best in the offseason to be like, man, we're losing that piece there and a couple pieces that are major, you know, arguably three best players last year, and we're going to make something work. And they really are so far. So
another thing we talked about a lot on this pod so far is the big man and how big of a need that was going into the offseason last year. What is your, I guess, what's your take on the big man situation this year? You have, you know, another year of Xavier Cork, you have Ernest Uday Jr. from Kansas, a All-American, and then, you know, other guys like Jacoby Cole's a big guy, Sam Mustafa's in there. What's your take on that big man rotation? And, you know, is there a guy that is going to separate himself from the bunch and become kind of the main, or is it kind of a do it by committee in that center group?
Yeah, I think what TCU said whenever they went after the guys they went after, specifically with Mustafa, a guy who, though I like the quality minutes he's brought for TCU so far, was never intended to be a starting big man at this level. And then whenever they continue to develop Cork and then obviously went out and got Uday, I think to me what that told me whenever I saw that move was Jamie Dixon said, we are going to play guard basketball that is then, you know, supplemented by great rebounding and great defense. Also a guy who can go up and get lobs. And to me, that's a fine way to play basketball. There are a few dominant big men that are just, you know, guys you can just go get either in the transfer portal or recruiting. And so TCU doesn't have the NIL money to get a guy like Hunter Dickinson. They don't have the ability to recruit overseas quite yet that Scott Drew has at Baylor. Go get a Vez Misi or something like that. And so, you know, that it's one of those things where I think TCU will have really great upset ability against a team like Houston matching up against their guards. I think TCU has the ability to do that well. I am nervous to play a guy like Hunter Dickinson. I don't see how this TCU team can stop him consistently. And I think that will probably be a war of attrition for TCU of let's try and just take that loss and then hit them in other places. And I think the same for a team like Baylor. Like, I don't see a way for TCU to consistently stop some of their bigger pieces and hope that they can just outplay their guard play. And same with a guy like Dylan Dessou at Texas once he gets back and fully healthy. So that's one of those things where you got to kind of just count your losses and hope that, you know, the way that you approach the game is able to be effective even against teams that look a lot different than you. And so to me, I don't think Jamie is trying to play the same ball that a Kansas or yeah. Baylor or Texas is trying to play. And that's one way to do it. And I like that approach, especially when you can't get a guy that quality. But there is potential for 100 Dickinson to drop 30 or 35 and 20 on you, as he has already this year. So that will be interesting. Obviously, Jamie is a defensive mastermind. I'm sure he will have a plan to try and stop those dudes, but it will be interesting to kind of see how that plays out. And just real quick to add, I don't know if a guy is going to stand out as far as this. I think it's a committee thing for the rest of the year because I really think this position is just meant to keep rotating guys. I think start with Uday and then the other two dudes consistently get their smaller minutes. So.
Yeah. From a broader point of view, too, with Baylor and Texas and how good this new Big 12 is, like BYU is having a great year in Houston. How do you see TCU lining up against these other programs and competing in the next couple of years?
Yeah, dude, that's a great question. I really like the recruiting they've done this year. I mean, they've got a top 20 class right now, and specifically for the most part, guard and forward heavy, nobody too big again. But I mean, obviously no surprise there. Tony Benford, one of the better recruiters that we've seen at this program. And in my opinion, one of the better like player first recruiters in the Big 12. So that's encouraging and something that was not seen in the last 5-6 years, especially in the earlier part. And so really, really encouraged by that. I think when we talk about this year specifically, Big 12 will once again be the best program college basketball. Have a couple teams that I already mentioned that have a chance to be top 10, 15, 20 programs. But then some teams, like you said, BYU and Oklahoma is one that really – I don't believe that they will sit where they're at. I do think they will be, you know, and once conference play comes, I think they'll probably be consistently in the 20s or right outside AP poll. But still, I mean, dude, what Otega Owe has done in his sophomore year, he's one of the most improved players in the conference. And that dude is, you know, a bigger guard, 215 pounds, and has just ability to score. I mean, dude is shooting almost 70% right now as a guard. Yeah. Just phenomenal guard play. So I picked TCU to finish fourth in the conference. And that was behind that kind of the big three of the Houston and the Kansas and the Baylor. Texas is a toss-up. I think it could go four or five. Interested to see if Max Asemus is able to figure out efficiency at the Big 12 level. He's kind of finding out that at this level, even though they haven't gotten a conference play yet, you can't just throw up 20 shots a game and be as efficient as he was at Oral Roberts. So that'll be interesting. Once again, they have to get Dessou back. But I would say that the peak for this team is fourth or fifth in this conference. But you guys are right. So many pieces. If a couple things fall the wrong way, this team could easily finish eighth or ninth in this conference. And I don't even think that's a disrespectful thing to say about TCU. It's more highlighting how good this conference is. So I'm going to land at the fourth or fifth spot because I'm encouraged and I'm optimistic, but I think it comes with some caution.
For sure. And if you had to play the prediction game, how do you see TCU season turning out?
Yeah. I think what's cool about this team is with how deep they are, you're going to see games not be decided by Michael Miles having a tough shooting night anymore. Or, you know, once again, Eddie Lampkin maybe mentally being a little less checked in, or some guys just not being able to shoot well. You know, you're not relying on Chuck O'Bannon to hit a couple threes in a game anymore like you might have been. And so I like how deep this team is, and I think games like West Virginia, Iowa State on the road are going to be a lot more winnable. I think we're talking about games that come down the stretch late are going to be a lot more winnable because of how cohesive and well-rounded this team is. And so I'm thinking this team finishes around 500 in Big 12 play and gets in the tournament. And somewhere, you know, at the peak of like a 6 seed, but probably more like an 8 or 9 seed, and is able to potentially make a run. So I really like this team a lot. Once again, I don't think the talent that was there last year gives me thought that they could get a 3 or 4 seed as I thought they could have last year, especially after that Kansas win. But I do almost without a shadow of a doubt think this team will make the NCAA tournament, which will highlight once again what Jamie Dixon is doing roots wise in this program. To make 3 straight tournaments is really impressive. So that's kind of how I'm feeling. But you, as you guys know, dude, it could be something where they rip off 5 straight wins to start conference play, or start 0-3, 0-4. And that's the scary thing, but also the benefit of playing in a conference like this. So
you mentioned depth, and we've talked a lot about depth and kind of the idea of TCU being able to not rely on one guy to do all the scoring. They kind of have options. I'm curious what you think about the improvements of guys like Jacoby Coles and Micah Peavy, guys you've covered before, kind of taking a step this year. What is your impression on what they are doing now and what they can do in the Big 12?
Yeah. I love both of those guys when it comes to the improvement they made. Because I am someone who is often player first in sports, but I think I saw it was maybe Noah Daniels or Mark Perry, someone on the football team. I want to say Noah Daniels, but tweeted something about guys leaving too early their school. And I think sometimes we do see that. Like, I really am a player first. Go be somewhere that's a good opportunity for you. But man, I think both Micah and Jacoby made that decision at a really good time, and then have still had opportunities since then to leave TCU, and they didn't. They stuck around. And we're talking about Dallas Morning News area player of the year in 2020 being between 3 people, Mike Miles, Jacoby Coles, and Micah Peavy. Like, these dudes are undoubtedly guys that can play ball and can hoop. And I was told, especially about Jacoby, over and over by Mike and his family, dude, this guy is really good, and he just needs to grow in confidence. He just needs y'all to believe in him. And then with Micah, we've seen him be one of the better on-ball defenders in the Big 12 the last couple of years, but his confidence in what could be his scoring bag, despite seeing it at times, was really low. And so for me, this is a testament to, one, these two guys and sticking it out, continuing to grow. They didn't know what minutes, especially Micah, they didn't know what minutes were going to look like this year with the transfers coming in. And they still came to work every day, and now have, you know, they're the second and third scorer on this team right now. And so to me, I don't think Micah is guardable as a slasher. He is so quick and has a knack for getting to the rim. And he's also obviously a great defender. And then Jacoby's ability to stretch the floor and the weight he's lost to be able to get shots off the dribble now, as well as shoot really well with confidence. I think he has a chance to shoot in the 40s from three this year, which is, I mean, shooting 55 right now, but shooting the 40s from three this year. And so to me, both of those dudes, though I don't think they are the guy down the stretch that should be creating the shots, as I talked about earlier with Jameer, I think they have a chance to just be awesome, awesome pieces of this TCU offense that, amidst a defense that has been elite, really needs some consistency and some efficiency. And I think we're seeing that so far. So really happy for those guys, and really stoked about what they're doing. And I think both of them could be potentially all Big 12 guys, honorable mention, or second team this year.
We're talking about experience too. TCU is top 5 in experience. How much value do you put on that? And do you think there's more of an urgency with guys being older to win now almost?
Dude, 1000%. I mean, both of those questions, yes. The first, the experience. I mean, it's funny, 2 years ago it was the opposite. I mean, TCU was just, I mean, such a young team. And it goes back to what I was talking about, late in games and big games, road games. Those are things that you can't chalk up to a freshman to understand some of the ins and outs of those things. And that's talking about, man, what happens when you get your third foul and you need to figure out how to play defense without getting your fourth and it's early in the second half? Or what happens whenever Allen Fieldhouse is rocking and we're up 2 points, but Kansas has the ball with 45 seconds? You know, all these things that's really hard for a freshman to understand. And sometimes we see that from a team like Kentucky, all kinds of talent, but sometimes lacking cohesion and experience, and it takes them a whole year to get that together. John Calipari typically does a great job of developing that. But I think what adds to this experience, even for guys like Jameer, Trey Tennyson, whoever, who have been playing college ball, maybe just not at TCU, some of the ins and outs come quicker. And instead of spending the fall trying to build that, you're consistently working on things like your offense, defensive scheme, getting guys, you know, possessions, getting guys looks and figuring out their offensive game. And suddenly that development that sometimes takes a whole season or takes until February, you hit that in November or December. And I really admire the way Jamie has done that in the past and gotten teams there by March. And I think that's why this team could be ahead of what we've seen in the past by a February or March, despite maybe having lower talent level. So absolutely super important. And then, yeah, for a guy like Emmanuel, or whoever, one of these older guys, like, I absolutely see the desire to want to win now. I mean, this is almost undoubtedly going to be the last time some of these dudes play college basketball. And so they're going to want to make a run for sure.
Yep. Sure. I love it. All right. Davis, you got anything else?
I guess real fast, just thoughts on Clemson this Saturday. What do you make of that game? What do you make of Clemson, and how big of a game is that? Neutral site.
I think it's a huge game, and I'll be honest with you guys, I think it's a game TCU absolutely could lose by 15 or 20 points because of what I talked about earlier. Untested, and they just haven't seen a team like this. This Clemson team's really good, especially defensively. Went on the road, Alabama. A good friend of mine is a manager at Alabama, was talking to me about just the environment and the way that Alabama just went cold, and really good defensive effort by Clemson. So that is going to be interesting. Clemson is so suffocating defensively, but even better offensively. And what really makes me nervous is, obviously, you talk about just their big man at the four and five. I mean, PJ Hall obviously stands out, but to me, I didn't even know much about Clemson until I was kind of doing preview for this game. But Ian Sheflin, however you say his name, their forward, I mean, that dude gets every rebound, and he is just a menace on the board, a bruiser, and the type of guy to just really throw you off defensively and then provide extra possessions for you offensively. I mean, I'm averaging over 2 offensive rebounds a game. And so it's rare to see a guy who's in that 6'7", 6'8", you know, height at lead your team in rebounds when you have a guy as tall as PJ. And it's a testament to what a dog Ian is. So, you know, they've got some good guard play. I like Chase Hunter, Joseph Girard, like those dudes can score the ball, but I'm really nervous about the big man. And so I'm interested to see, and what's cool, I talked about this earlier, this will give us a preview of what it would look like for TCU to guard a couple of these Big 12 teams that have bigger guys. So I think it's great for them. I don't think if TCU gets blown out in this game, don't be discouraged. It's okay. They haven't seen this yet, and it'll be a stepping stone for them regardless. I'm hopeful that it's close. I'm hopeful the Frogs win. I think regardless, it'll be a really huge step for them in their season, and getting a win would provide a ton of confidence for them moving into December, and especially as they start Big 12 play.
Yeah, definitely. When you looked at the non-conference schedule too, you didn't think Clemson would be a ranked opponent. So
I know.
It's obviously such a massive opportunity for the resume.
Not at all. Excited for that Arizona State matchup too. Obviously, they're not quite as good right now as they were last March. Obviously, had a couple guys leave, but still a good rematch. And anytime you could get a team this team hasn't even faced a top 150 team on KenPom yet. And so two top 100 teams. in a month is really helpful as you're preparing to play, you know, teams in the Big 12 in January. So
definitely. Well, we thank you for coming on. Looks like time's running off. We'd love to have you back anytime to talk some TCU hoops, especially later down the year. So appreciate everything.
Yeah, no, dude, thank you guys for having me on. Appreciate it. Love talking TCU hoops anytime. And hopefully it's a really fun season for you guys to cover. So
yeah. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks a lot, man.